Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later, we'll look at political fundraising in Wisconsin and see what lawmakers are raking in the big bucks.
First, in our Curious Wisconsin segment, we talk with two guests who set out to answer the question, how did a Wisconsin chair company producing records on the cheap build one of the greatest musical rosters ever assembled under one roof?
It's the story of Paramount Records, a label born in Grafton, Wisconsin, in the early parts of the 20th century. While the tale of Paramount has mostly flown under the radar in the years since its collapse, a group of devoted individuals is rekindling interest in the music and the stories behind it.
We've got two guests with us now, starting with Dean Blackwood. He's the co-founder of Revenant Records and worked with musician Jack White to release a new box set called The Rise and Fall of Paramount Records, 1917 to 1932, Volume 1. Dean, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by his brother, Scott Blackwood. Scott is a writer, novelist, and professor of English at Southern Illinois University. He wrote a book that's included in the box set that chronicles the history of the label. And Scott, it's good to have you, too.
Thanks for having us, yeah.
And Dean, let's start with you. So the origin story of Paramount Records, it's quirky. Now, you've got a Wisconsin chair company in Grafton in the early 20th century. How does it go from being primarily a place that manufactures things you sit on to a record company?
Right. Well, I mean, it wasn't because of any abiding interest in music, that's for sure. They really just wanted to sell these expensive phonograph cabinets that they'd started manufacturing. They worked as a contract manufacturer for Thomas Edison for his outfit in Orange, New Jersey. When his factory burned down, he had no place to manufacture the phonograph cabinets he'd been producing, and so he hired Wisconsin Chair Company to do that. They learned that the reason to be in the record business was really to be in the expensive phonograph cabinet business and to drive sales of furniture, essentially. And so that's how they sort of stumbled into being a record label in the first place. They spent the first 5 years or so steadily going out of business, and it finally occurred to them that maybe it did matter what was actually on the records. And so beginning in 1922, they embarked on what was called at the time race music or race records, which was essentially the music of black performers for black audiences.
Yeah, it's an interesting point to think about, isn't it, Scott? You've got this group of Caucasian guys in rural Wisconsin and a chair company who think, you know, we manufacture phonograph compartments. Why don't we just do the records, too? How did they become a launching pad for African-American musicians?
It seems like their whole intent was along the lines of, Edison is, you know, they wanted to just make a buck in you know, the bottom line. And as Dean had mentioned, you know, before this, people didn't even really put the labels or the names of the artists on the records. Edison had, you know, most of his people didn't even have names on them. So there was a big shift in 1920 when Mamie Smith has this huge hit, the first huge blues hit, Crazy Blues. And, you know, as Dean had mentioned, they were putting out anything, you know, just throwing up things against the wall during this period, 1917 to 1920, and just seeing what would stick. They had no idea. Their you know, German, Scandinavian, Mexican, ethnic music, whatever, you know, oompa bands, you know, whatever, they're not really sure what will stick. But once Mamie Smith hits, they reconfigure, and they figure out, you know, we've got to get some people to get to know this music first, but they had no idea where to start. And they were really fortunate in that a man named Mayo Williams,
Right, he's the producer who got the nickname Ink, right?
Right, for signing, he was incredible at signing people up, and it's a mixed bag with Mayo Williams. He's this incredible figure. He was a graduate of Brown University, African American man, graduate of Brown University, was one of the first NFL players in Hammond, Indiana.
Wow.
He was good friends with Paul Robeson, the singer, and just had been working for a label in New York. And as it turned out, it's Harry Pace's label there, and it was the first African American label. So he knew bits and pieces of this industry, but had no real certainly no managerial experience, and literally went up from, he was living in Chicago, basically doing record subscriptions, the kind of subscriber list, and he gets this idea in his mind. He knows where Paramount is and how they're sitting kind of on the edge of something, and so he makes a cold call, essentially goes up from Chicago to Port Washington. Passed through Grafton, and he to get a feel for things, and it's an unusual sight at this time for a black man to be a well-dressed black man to be walking through town.
Rural Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah, and so he literally, as he said later, he said, "I just jived my way into the whole thing. I had no idea what was going to happen, but he convinced them."
Yeah, he did right by them. He brought an incredible roster of artists, and I want to get to some of the music so people can hear some of what he brought. One of the first, Ma Rainey is one of the big names that came out of Paramount Records. Let's take a listen, and then we can have you tell us a little bit about it. This is the song "Take Me to the Basement."
I've got a man.
And clip there of the artist Ma Rainey. Dean, can you tell us something about her?
Yeah, she was one of the first big hit artists for Paramount. Sold tons of records, recorded a ton of records for them, and she was one of the folks that Mayo Williams brought to the label. Basically, he was their connection to black nightlife in Chicago, which is where initially they did much of their scouting for talent through Mayo Williams. He, of course, had entree to all the nightclubs and theaters where folks like Ma Rainey and Ethel Waters and Alberta Hunter and others were holding court each night. And Ma Rainey was one of these theater singers, although she had come from a little bit of a different background and kind of honed her chops in sort of the tents of vaudeville-style shows. Dating back to, pre-turn of the century. So by the time she records in the early 20s for Paramount, she's already well into her career. But she brought a grittiness to this sort of what they called theater blues. She certainly doesn't sound like anyone else, man or woman, from that time. And really had a sense of her sort of place in that world, a great stage presence, a really huge confidence on stage, and she was a big woman and used her size to her advantage and moved around well on the stage.
Yeah, well, she's got a gorgeous voice, and we're going to hear more of the music that came out of Paramount Records coming up as we talk with Scott and Dean Blackwood about the story of Paramount Records, which, believe it or not, was born right here in Wisconsin around Port Washington and Grafton. We've got a lot more of that story coming up in a few moments.
First, Jean Purcell joins us in the studio because it's our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. As a WPR listener, you know you're always going to hear something worthwhile when you tune in. Stories just like this one. Now is the time for you to put a value on that. Support this program and everything else you hear on WPR with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2000. 2552.
And we are looking forward to hearing from you. Last hour, by the way, we heard from 61 of you, new and returning members to Wisconsin Public Radio. And before we go any further, a big thank you for all of those pledges.
Some exciting news now this hour. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,600. This generous match is from current members, including donors from Madison and Baraboo. What does that mean? It means they're going to match every dollar you give. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's simple economics, really a great chance for you to make your pledge dollars go further this hour only. So get your pledge doubled right now. It really is a great opportunity to support Wisconsin Public Radio and make your pledge go farther. Make your pledge, WPR.org, or at 888-202-2552.
You turn to WPR for smart conversations about compelling topics. You can count on hearing in-depth, thought-provoking discussions all day, every day. Because WPR is listener-supported public radio, your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes all the difference. It makes these discussions possible.
It does. It makes the discussion you're hearing about Paramount Records and their presence here in Wisconsin possible, and giving to a WPR is easy to do. It really is. All it takes, just a few minutes of your time, and then a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
That donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Show your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
Now when we travel, I've got WPR's app for the iPhone. We listen to WPR all the time we're driving, 14, 15 hours a day sometimes, all across the country. This station has by far the best programming of any public radio station I've found anywhere in the country. This is prime programming. People should know that. People should be aware of it. People should know that there's something really intelligent happening right here in our midst. When we gave annually, you got a good feeling when you wrote the check. Now, as a sustainer, I'm reminded monthly. It does make you feel a bit more a part of the process, more a part of the entire effort to put intelligent programming on the air. We like the idea that we're putting our money where our values are. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pledge now and become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Gene Purcell asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio during our winter membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you choose that amount, remember that we've got a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, money coming to us from current members, including donors in Madison and Baraboo. And what it means, your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 doubles up to $200, and so on. So a great opportunity to take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programming. Get your pledge matched dollar for dollar, and you can do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Maybe you listened to WPR in school as a kid or in the car with your parents, or maybe you just found us a few months ago. Either way, you probably want to see WPR continue. It's an important part of your life, an important part of Wisconsin.
And if you've been listening for a long time when you were a kid with your parents in the car, but you've never given before, now really is the time to do your part. It's never too late to make that first contribution of, say, well, $5 a month. It's easy. It doesn't take long. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think of your contribution to WPR as an investment in your future listening. Give us just a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount. In return, you'll get lots of great programs.
Donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And in just those few minutes, 2, 3, or 4 minutes, you'll have made a wise investment, once that will pay dividends every single day.
And right now is a great time to make your pledge because of that dollar-for-dollar match in effect. It's from current listeners who put up some money to help encourage you to make your pledge. Maybe your first ever pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thanks to those listeners for their support. And when you make your pledge, ask for the new WPR logo t-shirt with your pledge of $120 or more. Just $10 a month, ask for the t-shirt at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Tom from Brooklyn pledged. He says, I listen to WPR every day. I wake up to it. I listen to it while I drive. Well, is Tom like you? Join Tom with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Scott and Dean Blackwood about the history of Paramount Records, what started as a project of the Wisconsin Share Company in Grafton and Port Washington in the early 20th century, became a launching pad for some of the most legendary jazz and blues musicians of all time, and it happened right here in Wisconsin. And before we go too much farther, I want to bring in some more music. This is maybe the biggest name, at least certainly one of them, to come out of this era, Blind Lemon Jefferson. This is Black Snake Moan.
I ain't got no mama now. I ain't got no mama now. She told me late last night, you don't need no mama no how.
And a clip there from Black Snake Moan of Blind Lemon Jefferson. And Scott, tell us a little bit about that artist. He's a big one.
Yeah, he's essentially the first, you know, rock star of blues. He's a male, obviously, who's accompanying himself on guitar. And this is the first, you know, this is the model that people think about often when they think of the blues. And he's just a huge hit for them. And, you know, again, they were kind of throwing things at the wall, see what would stick. And he changes everything for him. He even becomes a bigger seller than Ma Rainey. He's from Texas. He's from Wortham, Texas, outside of Dallas. And he was discovered there in Dallas, in the Deep Ellum neighborhood of Dallas. And was brought up, just essentially they put him on a train and had him come up and record. And
yeah, I want to ask you about that. What was it like to have these African-American artists who are, you know, at the top of their game? At the time, it's hard for them to get the recording contracts they might if they were white artists, but these are incredible recordings. And they just show up in Port Washington and they record. Can you talk a little bit about what that recording scene was like, Dean?
Yeah, well, they actually they didn't start recording in Wisconsin until pretty late in Paramount's life. They did most of the recording out of Chicago initially because they didn't have their own studio. It was hard at the time to set up a recording studio, and so they relied upon different studios in the Chicago area. But in the later years, beginning in like 28, 29. You did have folks like Blind Lemon Jefferson and Blind Blake, Charlie Patton, Son House, and a lot of the really famous early blues artists coming to a place like Grafton to visit and record there in the studio they had built. And it certainly was, as Scott mentioned, it was still an unusual sight. However many years after Mayo Williams' first visit to town, to see these African American artists walking around the streets of Grafton or Port Washington, where the offices were, the studio and the record factory were in Grafton, with the offices of Paramount a little bit further up the road in Port Washington. So. It was a little bit of a collision of worlds, especially because a lot of these artists had never been outside of their hometowns, you know, wherever they were coming from. Some from Mississippi, some from Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, lots of places, making their way in a sort of mini version of the Great Migration northward. So, very interesting time.
Scott, did Paramount Records know what it had in these artists? Did they know how important and incredible these recordings were?
They had no idea. Absolutely no idea. It was, you know, they knew that they would sell. They didn't really know why they were selling often. I mean, Maya Williams had a good idea, but the rest of them really didn't know. Or what would sell next. So they were just casting a net by this point, you know, far and wide to find the next Lima Jefferson. And that's how inadvertently someone like Blind Blake gets found, is because Mayo Williams was upset that someone had, Arthur Labley, one of the production managers at Paramount, had claimed discovery. And so there's this kind of internal war going on, too, at times between Mayo Williams and some of the other folks about the next move, you know, who got credit for it and those kind of things. So, yeah, it was a true collision in that sense. Yet, in meetings, Mayo Williams was still taking the freight elevator up, like when they would meet in Chicago.
Oh, boy.
So it's quite a, you know, but they don't know what they have, and and that's why they, you know, they essentially are just casting around because they don't understand their audience at all. So that changes when they come up with these scouts that are in, and they already had them in place, but they began to use them more and more in the South, who really did understand African-Americans and what they wanted and what they cared about. And so,
well, we've got to make sure we get to the end of the story here. By 1932, Paramount went out of business. Dean, what happened?
Well, it was, you know, it was the Depression. I think that's, you know, maybe the beginning and the end of the story. In the end, they while they had a lot of, you know, a lot of hit records, you know, they had never been particularly focused on quality. So they were, you know, when it came time for people to discard frivolous things, when money became tight, I think Paramount perhaps was the easiest to let go of. They didn't seem like prestige items, you know, in terms of they didn't focus a lot on the quality of the material that went into the records, meaning the actual physical material into, you know, the shellac, as they call it, the stuff into which the records were pressed, was really low quality. And so they didn't have a lot of customer loyalty to fall back on, like some of the companies that survived the Depression and are still around in some form today.
We're running up short of time here, but I want to ask you both about, what do you see as the legacy of Paramount today? What do these recordings mean, Scott, in our last 30 seconds or so?
Well, I think they influenced everything that was to come, culturally and musically, because each of these, once these records were out there, and many of them were carried by Pullman porters on the trains all across America. And so they were distributed that way and by mail. They influenced all these musicians, including, you know, early records that Paramount put out influenced Charlie Patton, and then Charlie Patton went on to influence, you know, all the Delta. And then from that, you know, you get to Sun Records, and from that you get on into the modern era.
And on it goes. Well, Scott and Dean, thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking with Scott and Dean Blackwood about the history of Paramount Records, which was born right here in Wisconsin.
Coming up after the news, a look at political fundraising in Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a bit, we'll take a look at political fundraising in Wisconsin and what it could mean for this fall's elections.
But first, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Membership Drive. I'm joined now by Jean Purcell, Veronica Rickert here, and we're here to ask you to invest just a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening. You can make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And now is a great time to make that gift because we've got a dollar-for-dollar match in effect all the way up to $2,600, and it's in effect right now. A great time to pledge because For every dollar you give, current members, including donors from Madison and Baraboo, will donate an additional dollar. Your pledge impact, in other words, will be doubled. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double your impact now. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I just want to point out that we have about 22 minutes left in the hour, and we still have about $1,600 left of that challenge grant on the table. So we want to make sure we get there and thank those listeners for their generosity. Now, as a public radio listener, you're smart, and you want to know what's going on, both in the news and in the culture around us. Well, we're right there with you, exploring all the angles on Central Time.
This is a great example of where your support goes, and we are very grateful for it because it makes all of the stories you hear in Central Time possible. So give now because it does make a big difference. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
If you want to make things even easier for yourself, you can become a sustainer. Choose a monthly amount that feels right to you, feels right for your budget, maybe $10 or $15 a month, say, and have it charged from your bank account or your credit card.
And I'm here, I'm living proof that it is an easy way to go. As a sustaining member, I will tell you that it's great to know that your monthly gift will continue year after year, so your support is always current. Become a sustaining member now at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this winter membership drive. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm here with Jean Purcell, and we're asking for your support of WPR. Your gift of $10, maybe $15 a month, whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got about 21 minutes to go left in the hour. That dollar-for-dollar match is in effect right now, and it comes to us courtesy of current members, including donors from Madison and Baraboo, who want to encourage others to become members of Wisconsin Public Radio, too. So what it means is your gift of, say, $50, is doubled. It turns into a $100 impact on Wisconsin Public Radio. So now is a great time to take advantage of the match. Make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. Get your pledge matched dollar for dollar and do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial-free. And what commercial-free means? Well, it means that we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, and corporate funding are important.
Those are very important sources of funding for us. But here's the thing. The single largest piece of the budget pie here at Wisconsin Public Radio comes from people just like you, people who listen to the service and value it. It is your support that makes the difference. In fact, we call it the backbone of our funding around here. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, we don't expect anyone or even 100 listeners to carry the cost of this program. In fact, there's an advantage to having the bulk of our budget come from thousands of listeners like you.
And one of the big advantages is when we have a wide base of support, it really adds up to a much more stable organization, which is a great way to go in these financial times. So join in, become a member, help build that base, that foundation. And you get to pick the amount. How much is it worth to you? $5 a month might be a good place to start, but make your pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
At WPR, you get to choose how much to give. So whatever feels right, whatever matches your listening and how passionate you are, how much you use the information that you get, a contribution of any amount, though, makes a difference. And here are some suggested amounts. The same amount you pay per month, maybe, for Netflix or cable.
Or maybe even coffee, which, like Wisconsin Public Radio, is probably something you look forward to every single day. Make that pledge now. Pick the amount. How much would you like to give? What's it worth to you? Because your pledge makes a difference. WPR.org or 888 202-2552.
And if you're making a pledge, I got to tell you, this is a great hour to make a pledge because we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect up to $2,600 this hour. Give now. Take advantage of that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support goes twice as far.
That's right. We've got about 17 minutes left to get in on that. So make sure that you call now. And when you make your pledge of support, be sure to ask for the new WPR logo T-shirt when you make your pledge of $120 or more. Just $10 a month, and the T-shirt can be yours. Don't forget to ask for it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
About 50 minutes left to take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,600. Do that now. Become a supporter, a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later in the program, we'll talk with the author of the Fat Chance Cookbook. It's filled with nutrition advice and recipes for eating well and kicking the sugar habit.
First, a new report out this week details political campaign donations in Wisconsin in 2013. While it wasn't an election year, state lawmakers still managed to take in a large amount of campaign cash.
And while one party holds a significant advantage over the other, our next guest says both parties used mega fundraising committees to draw nearly a third of the legislative campaign cash raised in 2013.
Joining us now to talk about the last year in campaign finance and what it means for this year's elections is Mike McCabe. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good to be with you.
So it wasn't an election year. How much money are we talking about raised by our elected lawmakers?
Now, legislators raised about $3.5 million in 2013, and if you look at the cash balances in their campaign accounts, it's over $4 million sitting there as they prepare for the November elections. But certainly when you look at the fundraising, there are 132 members of the legislature, but the big fundraising was done by a very small number of committees controlled by legislative leaders. So the money was really concentrated in the hands of a very few.
Who are some of those very few who raised the big cash?
Well, you know, first of all, $3.5 million was raised. Most of it went to Republicans. And of course, the Republicans control both the Assembly and the State Senate. And most of the money went to leadership PACs that are controlled by the lawmakers who are in leadership in both houses. They were real magnets for money, and of course interest groups want to influence those leaders because those leaders set the agenda in the legislature. They decide what bills are going to be voted on and which ones are going to be bottled up. So those leaders and their leadership PACs become just magnets for special interest campaign money. And indeed, if you look at the top recipients, the four top recipients are these committees controlled by legislative leaders. And then you go further down the list, and again, you know, the number five on the list is Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate Republican leader. And you look at the top cash balances, and there's the Republican Senate leader and the Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, right near the top of the list, right behind the Republican Assembly leadership committee that raised over $300,000 itself. So money flowed to power, and that's one of the things that's real clear about all these political donations is that money flows to power.
Was that true even when Democrats were in power? Whoever was setting the agenda in each house was a big beneficiary of campaign donations?
Yeah, clearly, you know, when you see the Democrats in control of the legislature, then the money begins to skew in their direction. And when the Republicans are in charge, they do much better with fundraising. And right now, the Republicans are in charge of both houses. So the interest groups are showering them with campaign contributions. And one of the problems with the money primarily going to these leadership committees or the legislative leaders themselves is that it concentrates an awful lot of power in a very few hands. And what that ends up doing is really robbing us of independent representation by our own individual state lawmakers. Our individual representatives are sort of being led around by the nose, and they're being told what's going to be voted on and what's not going to be voted on, and they really need to walk lockstep behind their leadership, or they risk either losing committee chairmanships or choice committee seats. They even can sometimes find themselves facing a primary challenger if they stand up to leadership. So this system is really concentrating power in a very few hands, and it results in a less independent-minded legislature, and one that is much more where power is consolidated in the hands of the leaders, and rank and file members of the legislature really don't have much choice but to walk lockstep behind those leaders.
So because those rank and file members aren't getting that much money directly to them, they're, you're saying, beholden to those campaign committees that are taking in the bulk of the cash.
Yeah, the big money is going to these leadership PACs. Now, those committees then dole money out to those legislators where they think, if they think there's going to be a competitive race in a particular part of the state, or if they think a particular legislator needs help, they send money in that direction. But they control the purse strings. The money's not going directly to those legislators. It's being funneled through these committees controlled by the legislative leaders. Because they control the purse strings, that gives them an awful lot of power over those individual representatives. Well, that's not good for the voters, and that's not good for the local people who just want an elected representative who's gonna go to bat for that district. Instead, what you've got are a lot of legislators who really have to follow or take their cues from the leaders and follow those leaders. And those leaders end up shaping the agenda. They decide what's going to get voted on and what's not going to be voted on. And that's just not healthy. It robs voters of independent-minded, authentic representation.
Do you think this system drives maybe independent-minded people away from running in the first place?
Well, I think not only do we effectively have a candidacy tax. Now, poll taxation was outlawed during the Civil Rights era. It's illegal to charge a tax for voting. But what we effectively have is a candidacy tax. It's become so expensive to run for these offices that you have to have an awful lot of money that you can put on the table before you're even taken seriously and you're a viable candidate. Of course, that chases good people away from seeking public office. It prevents good people who would be excellent representatives from even throwing their hat in the ring. And then once those people who do throw their hat in the ring get in the legislature, they find themselves having to answer to those leaders and having to take their cues from those leaders. And they can't really just represent their voting constituents the way they want to. Because they have to get some money from those people who control the purse strings. All of this really works against having good representation for voters.
How does the redistricting that we got out of the 2010 census and what came after that, how does that play into all of this?
Well, I think it again, the redistricting plan was shaped by the Republicans who control the legislature, and they designed districts that put them in a much more commanding position. They created more safe Republican districts, and they created more districts where some Democrats who had won by narrow margins now are very vulnerable. What that's going to do is it's going to narrow the number of races that are competitive. In most districts, it's going to be a foregone conclusion which party is going to control that seat. And so instead of voters really having a chance to choose their representative and decide which party they want to be represented by, the representatives are effectively choosing their voters, and it's becoming pretty obvious which party is going to control certain seats. Well, that's not healthy from a voter's perspective either. One of the things that also will do is probably lead to some people just deciding to hang it up and leave the legislature. And that's one thing that we saw. $3.5 million got raised, but it got raised by a very few people. When you look at a lot of the rank and file legislators, some of them raised next to nothing. And I think what that suggests is that they're probably not even going to seek re-election. So I think we're going to see a larger than normal number of departures from the legislature, not because these people probably want to leave the legislature, but I think because they're either fed up with being led around by the nose, or their district has been changed so it makes it next to impossible for them to compete for the office. So I think redistricting is going to whittle down the number of districts that are really in play and really are competitive and where voters truly have a choice between the two parties.
Well, we're early in the year still. We're just looking at last year's numbers. We've got a race for governor and the entire assembly, a lot of the state senate. Are you predicting a big year for campaign spending here in Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah, I think that we're going to see huge sums of money spent, but I don't think we'll see a record either in the governor's race or in the legislature, because we had these very unusual recall elections. In the 2012 election for governor, we saw $81 million spent. The previous record for an election for governor was $36 million in total spending. I think we'll see well over $36 million spent, but I don't think it's going to reach $81 million. That was a very unusual circumstance. And similarly, we saw a state Senate race run up to $10 million during the recall elections. We're not going to see a Senate election reach $10 million, but we'll see a number of million-dollar or multi-million-dollar races. There will be a lot of spending. Compared to normal elections in the past, we'll probably see record spending. But those recall elections, of course, were run under different rules. The targets of recalls weren't under any campaign contribution limits. They could take any amount. And we saw donors give as much as $500,000 to Governor Walker. This race, this year's race, will be run under campaign contribution limits, and no donor will be able to give more than $10,000 to a candidate for governor. So that's going to mean that there won't be as much money as we saw in these recall elections. But I think when you compare these elections in 2014 to normal elections, the amount of spending is going to be immense.
Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
That's Mike McCabe. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk with a renowned nutritionist about how to kick the sugar habit and still serve your family food they'll want to eat.
First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Membership Drive, your chance to show your support for all the programs you listen to throughout the year. Make that important step when you donate at WPR.org or with a call to 888-202-2552.
It's a fantastic hour to make a pledge right now. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,600 that's in effect right now this hour. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar that you give, current members, including donors from Madison and Baraboo, will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So far on the show today, we've heard about the latest on campaign finance in this year's elections, and we heard an amazing story of how a Wisconsin furniture company became a big player in the world of African-American blues music. That's just an example of the variety you hear each and every day right here on Central Time.
Your support makes the many topics we cover every day on the show possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Is listening to Wisconsin Public Radio worth maybe $4 a day to you? Consider becoming a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle. 9XM members are listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support Wisconsin Public Radio programs. $1,200 works out to a little less than $4 a day.
If you find that what you've been getting out of value from WPR in the last year is a lot, consider a contribution that puts you in the 9XM Leadership Circle. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Bill from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too. I think it's important because things are said and done on the radio that are important, that need to be said, that we don't get on any other radio station. I listen to it all the time. It's on the car, it's on the radio in the morning when we get up, and it's on all day practically, and it's just the way we live. I know that the money is going to be well used. It's a valuable service, and I just feel good about it.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. WPR is part of the way that you live, so it's time to make your pledge. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert with Rob Ferret asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio.
We have that dollar-for-dollar match still in effect now from current members, including donors from Madison and Baraboo. Still $1,000, just shy of $1,000 to go to reach that match. They'll match you dollar-for-dollar. Don't want to leave any of that on the table. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Get your pledge matched dollar for dollar right now. Do it at WPR.org or with a call at 888-202-2552.
You know, we hear from a lot of first-time pledgers who are giving because they've gotten their first job out of college or they're in a place where they can finally afford to give. Or people who turn 30 and realize, I'm a grown-up now. It's time to give to WPR.
People like Gary in Superior, who pledged just a little while ago. Gary says, pledging is something I've always meant to do, but never got around to doing it before. Gary, thank you so much for making that first pledge, for pledging to something you believe in, a service you rely on. Decide the amount. $5 a month maybe is a good amount to give, and then go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we ask that you make a contribution, and we also ask that you choose an amount that's comfortable for you. Some people give $5 a month. Some people give $100 or more a month.
Whatever the amount, we'll use it to support the programs you enjoy, keeping your source for information and entertainment going strong. So give now whatever amount is comfortable for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we have a $1 for $1 match in effect right now for the next couple of minutes only, up to $2,600. We still got money on the table, so give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR goes twice as far.
Ask for your very own new WPR logo t-shirt with a pledge of $10 a month or more. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, it is an easy thing. It just takes a couple minutes of your time. We need your name, how much you'd like to give. And the important thing is really that you make that decision. Become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Michael and Faye pledge. They're from West Allis. They say longtime listeners, longtime donors. Thanks for your continued support. We've also heard from Donald and Lynn from Janesville. They say WPR is our primary and favorite radio station. Thank you so much. How about you? It's your turn. Make that pledge right now. Just a few minutes to take advantage of that match. You can keep pledging through the news at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we've still got about $600, $700 of that matching gift on the table. You can use this moment, seize the day, as it were, and become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can join those who have already supported Wisconsin Public Radio with their dollar-for-dollar match right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.